Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to How to Survive, the show that teaches you how to survive the stuff that can kill you.
Like Tom Ripley, or the tram rides at Universal, or being a POW.
And the stuff that just makes you wish you were dead.
Like falling asleep at your own trial, or bad sports dads, or losing your voice.
Oh man, I don't want to lose my voice. How would we do the show?
Well, and how would we sing our theme song?
Let's play it.
Do you do?
Ground is shaking under our feet. Mountains on fire, flooding in the street. Can't breathe the air, can't fight the feeling. Goblin down, Xanax ain't the way to be dealing. Gotta do better than just getting high. We gotta stick together if we're gonna survive.
Hello.
Hey, welcome.
Welcome.
Thanks for listening.
You're welcome. Oh, you're not thanking me, you're thanking the listeners.
I was talking to the great out there.
The great out there, yes. How are you today?
Excellent.
Did you have a good weekend?
Yes.
Or a week since we saw it?
Oh, well, that's here. A bigger question.
Yeah, that's true.
The weekend was good.
Yeah.
Overall, yes. I have been good since I saw you last, for the most part. You know, I had my colonoscopy.
That's right. And it went, everything is better now.
Everything is better. I do not have anything wrong with my internal insides. Well, that part anyway.
So how long, right, just your heart.
My heart is so broken.
Your heart's broken and twisted.
Yeah.
You were having problems following the original procedure of nausea and nothing felt right.
Right.
How long did that last?
Long time.
But it stopped
6 weeks.
Ugh. But it stopped prior to this.
Yes.
Okay.
But that's why he wanted to do an endoscopy as well.
Is that stick something down your throat?
Yes. So they do a scope down your throat. So right before they put you into the delicious sleep of fentanyl or whatever they're giving you.
Uh-huh.
No, it's probably
it's not fentanyl.
It's not fentanyl. I think it's
propofol.
Propofol. Hey, whatever. They put a thing in your mouth so your mouth is held open.
Uh-huh. Like one of those party game things that keeps your mouth open.
It's like a party game.
Uh-huh.
And so they can put a tube down your throat.
Ugh.
But you don't know it.
But when you wake up, do you feel weird that there was something down your throat or you don't
feel it? No, but you know for a couple days.
What do you mean?
Because you have a little scratchy throat.
Yeah.
And I had really bad heartburn.
Oh.
So I couldn't eat really anything at all. Like I was eating
Did they lube it with sriracha to get it down your throat?
They might have.
They just brought in Benjamin's
hot sauces.
Hot sauce package.
His hot sauce game.
Display.
On display in his treasured items shelf. Yeah, so they might have just poured hot sauce down my throat. But so, yeah, I was sensitive, I guess, to what I ate for a few days. But also they took biopsies.
Oh.
And maybe that's why, too, I was sensitive, because they were pulling pieces of skin out of my body.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
You don't want me to describe it that way?
So, but the biopsies came back negative.
They said, you were perfect.
Was this the same doctor as the first
Heck
one who
no.
blamed you?
Do you think I'd go back to that guy that yelled at me?
I was
no, this out. Guy was handsome.
Oh, that's what you want.
That's what you want in your butt.
Yeah.
Well, why not?
I guess it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. I'm not going to date him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who cares? But So why not take a handsome one? He was young and handsome.
Nice.
Thanks, Dr. Hom.
Speaking of young and handsome.
Yeah, let's do it.
I've seen this billboard for this Anne Hathaway movie, this Prime Anne Hathaway movie.
Oh, I don't know it.
The Idea of You.
No, I don't
know. It's like she ends up dating some, it really seems beneath her. At least the poster makes it look like a Lifetime movie. But like she ends up dating some young, I think he's supposed to be like a pop star.
Okay. Is this like a Mrs. Robinson kind of?
I guess so.
And she's, that's hilarious.
Well, I was trying to figure out, how old is she? Mm. She like 40? She's not 40 yet, is she?
She couldn't be.
Maybe she is. She looks beautiful.
She's gorgeous.
She's gorgeous. In any case, there is a big age difference.
Okay.
I mean, you can even tell on the poster. Like, there is, I don't know. There is somewhat of an age
difference.
But
even when she was 17, she seemed 34.
That's true.
She's always seemed more of an adult than me.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, God, that looks terrible. And I'm so going to watch that by myself.
Yeah, you have to.
I'm definitely not watching that with the men in my house.
Well, they don't want to.
That's what I'm saying. They're not going to want to at all. But it looks so... did you find out how old
she is? Do you know who the actor?
She's 41.
Oh. She's 41. Okay. All right. And the actor, like, they had a dance in the audition. She was talking about how when she was young, they had already cast her in something. I don't remember what the movie was. And the chemistry tests were she had to make out with a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
And they were like, aren't you excited? You get to make out with a bunch of, you know, guys today.
Yeah.
And she was really not excited, but had to pretend that she was because she didn't want to be labeled difficult.
Yes. Of course.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
He looks very young.
Yeah, he's super. Yeah, he looks like a baby. Yes. Like a baby.
Oh, wait, a baby boy.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a HTS watch.
He's 52.
For all of us.
He's what?
He's 52.
He's 52.
Wow.
Men age better. Amazing. I mean, they just really do. They just age
he's
better.
He's probably, 22 or something?
He is.
Or maybe he's playing younger.
29.
Oh,
he's British.
He looks younger than 29. He looks 22.
Very young.
So he's playing younger, I'm guessing, because if the point is that there's an age difference, he looks young. I think he's probably playing younger. He did have an earring in the poster, though, and I was like, that might be out.
Yeah, earring.
Blonde plus earring. What?
You can take those out.
But it was like it was a hoop.
Oh.
It was like a little hoop, and then. I was like, ooh. I'm very particular.
How else are you going to know he's a musician?
That's a good point. Wait, he doesn't have like a guitar pick on a necklace?
That might be the alternate ad. She might be grabbing onto that in a different ad.
Yeah. What else? What did you watch? What else did you watch?
Well,
besides a movie poster that you saw?
I watched a movie poster. So I saw a movie.
Yes. A movie.
I didn't know anything about.
Oh, good. Those are fun to go in.
I saw Civil War.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you see it, Garen?
I did.
And what were your thoughts?
I think it's a borderline brilliant film that I never want to watch again, that I didn't enjoy watching, I don't think.
Okay,
but
I agree with half of that.
What it is from a filmmaking perspective, I guess. But it's very cynical. It doesn't... I don't know necessarily that the script is that great.
It's
because
not.
It kind of telegraphs everything that happens pretty quickly. But I think I can appreciate what it is without ever having to see it again. You know.
I don't know what it is. I think it was just like, yeah, we're headed towards Civil War. Okay, tell me something I didn't know. There was no intellectual or emotional thrust behind it. You never find out why they're in Civil War. It's just...
Mm-hmm.
Some dudes in like flowered shirts thought they were Trader Joe's employees who are like,
well, that's who's going to end up in the Civil War.
Yeah,
it's going to
be. Yeah.
They're going first. They're the first of the line.
Yeah. I just thought it was.
It wasn't for you.
I don't know
who it would be for. It was just so dumb.
This is what I read about it, guys, having not seen it.
Yeah.
It's more about the journalist's experience than...
Well, that's all it's about.
Yeah, that's the point. Movie is about an experience of... Not the people who go and cover wars is what the movie's supposed to be about.
Yeah, and it's unflinching
in that,
really.
Yeah. But it's also, like, not saying anything particularly interesting about that. It's like, what are the things you would think of? It's hard to observe war.
Yeah.
It's hard to not help the people you're photographing. That's about it. I mean, there's no, like, real interesting development beyond that. There's not interesting character development.
Right.
There's not... It's just like... Yeah, but if you're going to make a movie about America being in civil war at
maybe
this time...
make a point.
Yeah.
Do you think we should send Alex Garland Save the Cat?
Is that the writer-director?
Yeah.
Alex Garland?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Oh, you know what I watched that I really enjoyed that I haven't finished yet because Benji said, can we watch something else?
Mm-hmm.
The Beckham documentary.
Oh.
Oh, I heard that was good.
Guys, it's delightful.
I heard it was really
good. You should really watch it. You do not need to care about soccer.
And apparently that doesn't help if you do because he didn't want to watch it anymore.
Well, yeah, that's true. And he loves soccer
right.
so much. So... here's why he stopped wanting to watch it after about 20 minutes. And it's not just one documentary. It's a series. So it's multiple episodes. Romance.
He meets
Posh Spice.
And he doesn't care
And
about
Benji
that.
Was like, can we watch?
Yeah.
Can we watch that. Grimsburg? And I was like,
oof. Okay.
And I was like, oh, I really like what we're watching. David Beckham is so winning and so nice and
oh, that's
sweet.
Good to
and
hear.
She's wonderful.
That's so funny. You wouldn't think she would be wonderful in any way.
They're delightful. Like when they, it's really.
Yeah, you're not the first person to tell me this.
I really, really liked it.
Okay.
I mean, it's just so cute in watching their romance and the way they meet and like how they talk about each other. Like, it's really funny.
Okay.
Like, not funny, but
yeah,
like
no,
the way they are with each other. I recommend it highly.
I cannot imagine anyone ever describing Posh Spice as delightful.
Maybe it's just her facade.
Maybe, I think,
like, it's a character.
It's a character.
They come across as like very regular people, like at least in the early,
as much as they can.
When they meet. And
okay.
There's a funny moment when they go in to interview her. It's Fisher Stevens is who's interviewing them and who produced this documentary. I have no idea.
So weird.
I have no idea. You never.
He has a very small part in The Night Of too. He's the pharmacist.
And Succession.
Yes.
Remember how long I thought he was the brother of?
Yes.
Okay. So he's, you know, it's all with Beckham when he's young, and it's his family's very close and tight knit, and his dad's of course obsessed with soccer, and it's all about him wanting to, you know, be a soccer player, and then they're sitting down with Victoria, and she says, you know, I think both of us having these close families, it really meant we. We're drawn to each other because of our closeness to our own families. And we were both like working class. And he opens the door and he goes, what kind of car did your dad drive you to school in? And she's like, it's not that simple. And he goes, no, what kind of car did your dad drive you to school in? And she's like, David, it's more complicated than that. And he's like, no, tell them what car your dad drove you to school in. And she goes, a Rolls Royce.
Oh.
So it's so funny that he just calls her out
That's
on
funny.
It when she's trying to say they're both working class.
That's really funny.
And I think you guys would really enjoy it.
Okay,
so
I will.
I'm going to keep watching it.
What is it on?
It's on
Netflix.
No, I think it's on Netflix. What else happened?
Our whole lives are just watching. Oh, Oliver was he was an extra in the school's Fiddler on the Roof.
Did he get $60 from
$60?
You know, for his extra work.
Oh yeah, no, we got yelled at a couple times.
And, what?
It's a long story. He likes the teacher, but she she's intense. The musical theater person.
Was he not keeping his mark?
No, he just had to leave early one day.
Oh.
She was like, yelled that they were going to have to redo everything. And literally, he's in the background. I mean, he doesn't dance. He doesn't sing.
Yeah.
He literally stands there
we're
pretending.
We're going to have to redo everything?
I was going to order the wigs today. I can't do that now. He doesn't wear a wig in the show. I have no idea.
Okay.
Trust me, I have literally no idea.
She's got her own stuff going on, it sounds like.
But then he likes her. I don't know. But in any case, The play was good. I'm just not a big fan of Fiddler on the Roof. It's fine. It's just it's
how
not
Jewish
my,
are you even?
I know. It actually did mean a lot watching it. Believe yeah. it or not, it actually did touch me because Aww. Of what's going on. There's a lot of anti-Semitism going on in America, and you know, it's all about we're going to run you out of your off your land yes. because you're Jewish.
Yeah.
And so it was actually quite touching. Mm-hmm. I wish I could like the show. It's just, I don't know. It's just, there's no dancing. I mean, there's, you yeah. know, the one thing with the bottles. That's cool, but it's not
I know nothing.
Oh, you never seen the Jewish dance where they put the bottles on their heads and they have to keep the bottles on their heads. Mm-mm. And oh, really? Okay. Well, look it up. It's fun.
Okay.
And the kids really had to do it.
You got to go see this.
I got to, yeah. I was allowed to pay $25 a ticket. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, this is not a circumstance where I have to see the show more than once because he's That's literally good. Just That's in the background.
So you just got to see it once.
I got to see it once. So.
Gosh, I got to go to a soccer game.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I got to do.
Uh-huh.
But I only had to go to one because only Alex had a soccer game this weekend.
Is she enjoying it?
Yeah, I think she is.
Great.
I think she is. I got to sit in the blazing sun. It's weird because it was only like 72 degrees, but when you're on those bleachers, those metal bleachers,
yeah.
it feels like 172
The Earth's core is radiating through you.
I got to tell you guys. Though that something that just can I say chaps my ass?
Yes.
Is that an expression?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So we're all there. It's, you know, I don't know, like 10 parents maybe. One thing that already makes me mad is that it's like not as many parents show up for the girls' games yeah. as the boys. And we're all rooting and cheering and yelling and go Ashley and go Ariana and go Arabella and
all
go
A
Adriana.
Names.
They stopped at the A's.
So weird.
Everybody in 2011 and 12, they went to the baby book and
yeah.
they just all picked for, like,
yeah.
they were looking and then they never got to the B's.
There's no time for B's.
Aspen, Avery number two.
Like, are any of these real names?
Oh, those are the names. I'm telling you the names.
Wait, you're not being funny?
No.
They're all A names?
Yeah, I swear.
And there are two Aspens?
Avery 2, Aspen, Arabella, Ariana.
You're not kidding.
I am not kidding.
Arabella?
Arabella? Arabella? I think it's pretty.
These are all the A's. All A's, all the time. On both sides, too. They'll get confusing because there's always like an Avery on each team. It's A's
wow.
are, it's wild.
All I think of Avery is those labels.
I know, but it's a really popular name from the 2011 and 12 era.
Okay.
So we're all there, right? There's a dad comes to the game and he goes over to the shade, lays on a bench and reads a fucking book.
No.
Yeah.
You prick. Maybe it's a stepdad.
No, no. He's the dad. And I am like, are you fucking kidding me? We're all there in the sun. You
Asshole.
Know, my big sunspots just getting bigger. I'm every night putting that goddamn retinol on my face, leaving my house every morning with my 100 sunblock on.
Right.
And here I am on this metal conductor.
Yeah.
Just watching the those sunblocks are going from like dimes to quarters on my face.
You're like a hot dog on one of those rotating things at 7-Eleven.
He's over there, you know,
in the shade.
In the shade under a cherry tree reading Malcolm Gladwell.
Oh, it's a 500,000 hours of just like
10,000 hours.
10,000 hours of
becoming an expert in being a douchebag. Oh, wearing a beanie.
What?
Wearing a fucking beanie.
In the heat?
Yeah.
Wait, he didn't have to go in the shade. He could have just taken off his beanie and been perfectly comfortable.
Oh, that guy.
What?
Also, I'm just like, do you want your daughter to be a stripper?
You think that's the next step?
Well,
she's already named Avery.
Yeah.
Or Aspen.
Aspen 2, by the way.
Aspen 2. There's really two Aspens?
It might be Avery's that they're two of.
Do you guys remember Aspen the drink? I always ask people this. No one remembers.
Aspen the drink.
It was an apple soda.
No.
And I loved it so much. But I think more than anything, I really loved the commercials because it was Aspen. And they'd be like in this winter wonderland, like a woman in a white fur coat
Ooh.
And white fur hat. And she'd be like, it was very 70s romantic,
yeah.
you know, waspy fantasy.
No. I wonder if it was just here.
I have a local. I mean, it certainly didn't feel like a local commercial. It was like a big, but maybe it was like a West Coast. You're saying like a, like maybe. Aspen wasn't available yes. all over.
You know, like Squirt.
Was Squirt not available all over?
I don't know. I feel like you couldn't get it everywhere, but maybe you could.
Is Squirt the one they renamed? No.
No, that's Sierra Mist.
Sierra Mist. It's, used it's to be Slice.
Starry now?
Oh, Sierra Mist is Starry. Yeah.
Slice. I just Slice. Forgot about Slice.
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's so many things I in the know, world.
But Aspen. Okay, so did anyone kick dirt in his face?
No, I wanted to.
I don't blame you.
I was that's so shitty. Mad. I'm just like, I was cheering so loudly for his daughter, like hoping to just get some daggers in that's his awesome. Fucking heart, I like love it. Every time.
Aspen too.
Aspen too, you are doing so great.
Should we get to today's?
Let's do it.
Topic.
Let's.
What
do
are we surviving?
It. Let's fall in love. That is not what we're gonna do today.
No.
We already did that. We're all in love. This is another good lesson that people could learn.
Yes.
That you never want to learn. This is how to survive as a prisoner of war.
What?
Yeah. I would not want my kids to learn that lesson.
Holy shit, Chris.
I know.
Okay.
It's getting deep. You're not gonna probably have to learn this, right. Danielle. Nor will you, Garen. You know why? Because you're not in the military. And that's usually who's taken us.
Well,
a
look,
for.
If Civil War's taught us anything, you don't have to be in the military. You could just be a guy with a flower shirt.
Hey, you could just be working at Trader Joe's.
You could just be a Trader Joe's guy coming in.
I love that voice.
I don't know. I don't know what that was.
I love this new
just
character.
My irritation at sitting at that movie at 10:40 in the morning.
Oh, that's too early for that movie.
I love that. There, you live in a life where you can go to the movies at 10:40 in the morning. This is
we
my,
don't
someday
we don't do
this
anything.
Is, this is my dream. You're not at a soccer game,
no.
Silently cursing a man in a beanie reading Malcolm Gladwell. All right, so unless you're in the military, okay, they have to complete this training. It's called Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape.
You mean everyone in the military has to complete this?
Everyone, well, here's what's interesting. Like, if say you're going in the military and you're like, I'm just going to be a cook.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to be like the person who types up the notes mm-hmm. for the generals. That's what yeah. I want to do in the military. Like, uh-huh. Which I would suggest if you do have to go in the military.
Sure.
You know, do something like.
Be a stenographer.
Light. Yeah. Be a stenographer. You know, be the person who like sweeps the floors. You're going to just have to do like A-level training. Okay. But if you're like, I'm Green Beret, man, fuck it. Then you're doing full on. Go. All
you can't be captured if you're a cook.
I think it's less likely.
Yeah, I guess because you wouldn't be out there.
Go
okay.
somewhere, you know, say what are the jobs where I don't have to be in action? Tell me what those are.
Right.
So then you only have to do this A-level survival, evasion, okay. resistance, and escape. But if you are going to go Green Beret, Special Forces, any of those intense like Air Force, you know, you're going to be flying planes into enemy territory. You're going all the way to the sea level.
Oh.
I read a really interesting article about this. It's SEER for short, S-E-R-E, Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape. They said they have to do these training exercises, right, where they go out and have to evade capture from the enemy, which is just other soldiers trying to capture them, right, and
uh-huh.
survive in the wild. And then they get captured, and then the people capturing them do sort of pseudo-torture, but they can actually, you know, do torture exercises. And
how do you pseudo torture?
Well, like they're not like burning them with cigarettes. I don't uh-huh. they don't really tell you. It's all kind of secretive.
Burning them with vape pens.
They burn them with vape pens. Tickle
you're
them maybe.
Watching the most innocent 80s action movies. You're going to tell me everything you know.
Yeah, it's not exactly.
But they said the ones who were the toughest interrogators who made them break were the women.
Oh.
Of just psychological bullshit. just kind of like, oh, I'm not mad. I just torture them with
what
like,
do you want for dinner? With
you don't know, if you don't know, if you don't know what I'm upset about, then I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah.
And then they just go crazy.
So in regards to evading the enemy, so this is the evasion, they're trained in some well-known basic skills. When I say the basic skills, this is like camouflage, stealth technology, Morse code, feints, which isn't what you think it is, right? Feints isn't like what we do when we get scared, which is fall
faint.
On the ground and
okay.
faint. This is giving the impression that a certain maneuver will take place. Like it's
oh,
a fake out.
F-E-I-N-T.
Yes, F-E-I-N-T, which okay. I didn't know that. Radio silence, that's another military evasion technique. So the military has a vested interest in not openly discussing their evasion techniques.
Yeah.
Because...
Wait, I'm sorry. The evasion is to not get caught in the first place?
Not get caught in the first place.
Not get captured.
Right. Okay. So in the same vein, some elements of hostile survival preparedness are classified, and this is especially true for resistance training. This is the preparing of people who might be captured for stress, abuse, torture, interrogation, indoctrination, and exploitation. They don't want this out in the world because they don't want their enemies to know about it.
Yeah, so you're blowing up their spot is what you're telling
exactly.
us.
Exactly. So there's not that much information out there, it turns out, for us to have.
Is there a lot of, like, get down on the ground and roll away?
I think that's when you're on fire.
I'm just picturing, like you slay.
Somebody's trying to grab you, so you just drop to the ground and roll away.
Yeah.
I think that's how one of Ted Bundy's potential victims got away from him.
Is that true?
She, like, was in his VW Beetle. And this was when he had gotten somebody at a Walden Books and pretending to be a detective. And she got into his car because he was like, I'm a private detective. Your car's been stolen from the mall's parking lot. And we have to take you to the police station so that you can, give us a statement. She got into his VW, realized there wasn't a seat because he had ripped out the front seat.
Oh.
And was like, this isn't right. And she while they were driving, she just opened the door and rolled out.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah.
She's I love it.
One of his probably few survivors.
Whoa.
Fun facts about Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
Okay. So one thing everyone trained in SEER learns is the code of the United States Fighting Force. I'm not going to read all of it because it's a lot of it. Mm-hmm. But this is a couple things about if they're captured. If I am captured, I will continue to resist by all means available. I will make every effort to escape and to aid others to escape. I will accept neither parole nor special favors from the enemy.
Okay.
If I become a prisoner of war, I will keep faith with my fellow prisoners. So some God stuff. I will give no information.
Is that what it means, though?
I'm not sure.
Or does it just mean... Okay.
It might not.
It might.
I will give no information nor take part in any action which might be harmful to my comrades. If I am senior, I will take command. When questioned, should I become a prisoner of war, I am required to give name, rank, service number, and date of birth. Mm. I will evade answering further questions to the utmost of my ability. I will make no oral or written statements disloyal to my country and its allies or harmful to their cause. This guy, Navy Command... This guy... This fucking guy. U.S. Navy Commander Jeremiah Denton was forced to appear at a televised press conference. He was kept as a POW in Vietnam. He repeatedly blinked the word torture with Morse code.
Yes, I think I've heard of things like this. Wow.
So the code of prisoners at the Hanoi Hilton, Hoa Lo prison, take physical torture until you are right at the edge of losing your ability to be rational. At that point, lie, do or say whatever you must do to survive, but you must first take physical torture. So that was their code when they were prisoners at the Hanoi Hilton.
What do you mean their code? That's what they were saying to each other?
I think so.
Or their code of ethics?
I guess that was what they sort of decided as a group.
I'm assuming this includes
John McCain.
John McCain, yeah.
A pilot POW who gave the name of comic book heroes when his captors demanded the name of his fellow pilots. So they would do that. Lying was also something.
That's fun. It's a fun exercise.
Might as well make a joke out of it.
I'm Blue Beetle.
Yes.
I'm guessing they used the alter ego.
Andy Cap is the head of the
army.
I love that you went to Blue Beetle.
I don't know why.
It's a third tier.
I know. Well, didn't they make a movie of Blue Beetle?
Did it ever come out? Yeah, and it's actually really good.
Who's in it?
It's the kid from Cobra Kai is.
I don't know.
Oh yeah, Miguel. I feel like that was something Benji wanted to see, and I was good. I don't want to see it. I should have had you take him. So this is an interesting article I read about this Civil War historian, an author, Jonathan White. He collected 400 dreams of soldiers and prisoners of war for a forthcoming book. He studied the dreams of POWs, and a Harvard psychologist analyzed the dreams of British officers held by the Germans in World War II. They also studied the dreams and diaries of Civil War soldiers and found that, you know, that a lot of the dreams were disturbing. A lot of them were dreaming of food. Mm. But that one of the things that they found was that for many POWs, dreams played a really comforting role because they would dream of home, hugging or kissing their wives, picking up their children, and that turned out to be a very comforting thing for many soldiers and POWs.
Did they keep diaries or they just remembered the dreams after they were released?
These Civil War, the way they knew about the Civil War soldiers was from their journals.
Gotcha.
Okay. Obviously they couldn't talk to those soldiers because it was from a long time ago. But this other guy, let me find it here. Okay, so let me scroll down. I'm trying to find it. Okay, here we go. So he talks about this prison called Laufen. It's in Germany during World War II. It was a converted castle. So they were captured early in the war, and the guy, one of the soldiers who was there, was a POW, and so he was also a psychologist. He started conducting a survey of his fellow captives, asking them if they would participate in a study of dreams.
You're kidding.
He's like,
while they were captured.
Right. So he persuaded 79 prisoners to record or tell him their dreams the morning after they had
them. That's amazing.
He transcribed them in his journals, and he was going to use the material for his doctoral degree at the University of Brunum, but he died.
Oh, no.
Of emphysema. And then before the camp was liberated, so the Allies found his journal, sent them to his dissertation advisor, and they kind of sat around for a while. So the Allies found his journals and sent them to Hopkins' dissertation advisor in Birmingham. And then later, Barrett, one of the world's leading dream researchers, jumped into the material.
Unbelievable that the guy had the presence of mind to do that.
I thought that was sort of crazy. So what I'm going to just tell you guys in general, how to survive as a prisoner of war. Number one, don't join the military.
Done.
Okay. If you do, avoid active combat roles and special forces. Be a cook.
Yeah.
You know, take a clerical position. Ask if, you know, somebody needs the dogs walked. You know, the military dogs.
I hope those soldiers like macaroni and cheese muffins and salmon, because that's about all I know how to cook.
There you go. I have a good salmon recipe for you. Number three, if you are taken as a hostage, no Morse code, Danielle.
No. Oh, I thought you said no, like N-O. Yeah, oh, K-N-O-W.
Yes, K-N-O-W, yes. Morse code. Keep a dream journal?
Yes.
Some researcher might want that.
Plus, if you're in another country, they probably can't read it.
Yeah. I would say also remain calm.
Also, go to the ground and roll away, right?
Yes, of course. Roll away. And then also then Ted Bundy can't get you. And have a dad who is kind of a big deal, as this next story illustrates.
Oh, okay.
Guys, I'm going to share the crazy story that you guys have never heard in this detail of John McCain.
Awesome.
Okay, so guys, he was not going to get out of joining the military.
Okay.
He had an ancestor who served on George Washington's staff.
Whoa.
He had a great uncle who helped General John Blackjack Pershing chase Pancho Villa across Mexico.
Uh-huh.
His grandpa was a commander during WW2, fought at Guadalcanal, and his dad, Jack, battled the Japanese. Okay.
Whoa.
Nepo baby.
Yeah, a really nepo baby. So he and his father would eventually become the first father-son to attain ranks of four-star admirals. Before all that, though, he joins the Naval Academy.
Okay.
He's pretty bad at naval school.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He doesn't follow the rules. He stays up late playing poker.
Would you say he's a maverick?
Oh, he was definitely a maverick. He's late to classes and other stuff. He's constantly getting demerits for unshined shoes, other things you're getting demerits for.
Huh.
When he graduates in 1958, he ranks 894th out of 899.
Come on.
And guess what? His dad and grandpa also graduated at the bottom of their classes. So he comes from a long line
a
of
legacy.
Underachieving success stories. But guess what? This does not generally tend to get in the way of white men.
Yeah. Someone's got to be at the bottom.
Yes. Failing upward. So he heads off to Florida, where he turns out to be not a great pilot. So once he has to ditch his plane in Corpus Christi Bay after his engine gives out, another time in the Mediterranean, his daredevil clowning, these are his words, not mine, knocks down some Spanish power lines. Okay. So back in Florida, he meets Carol Shep. They get married. I'm assuming he crashed his plane into her. He adopts her two sons, and then he goes off to Mississippi to be a flight instructor because he'd only crashed one plane so far.
Okay.
So he knows at this point, he's like, I'm never going to achieve anything notable in my career based on my record. So his idea is like, you know, I got to get into combat. That's the only way I'm going to get awards. Like, that's the only way I'm ever going to get like the medals and all the things I need to be a big deal.
Okay.
So his dad's a big deal. And he's like, Dad, can you start the Vietnam War? And his dad's like, no problem.
Wait, what do you mean? Who's his dad?
His dad is a big deal in the Navy. Like, he's
even though he had
his dad's at
the bottom.
Yeah, because he's a white guy. So he just
they're all white guys. They just Chris, fail upward. All of them were white guys then.
That doesn't matter. He failed upward.
Okay.
So he's like, Dad, can you start the Vietnam War for me? And his dad is like, absolutely. So his dad starts the war. It's not how I ever heard it. Crosby, Stills, and Nash song, you know, Four Dead in Ohio. Uh-huh. My dad started the Vietnam War. So he joins the squadron.
Our teachers told us.
I thought it was Henry Kissinger.
I know it's weird, but just look it up.
Okay.
So he joins a squadron. He's in this thing called Operation Rolling Thunder. This is a bombing campaign that President Lyndon Johnson started in 65. And then by 67, McCain's a lieutenant commander. So he had probably crashed like three more planes. And they were like, all right, now you're lieutenant commander.
We got to get you out of the air. We're going to promote you.
One day he's up in the sky prepping for a bombing run. And a nearby jet accidentally, for once it wasn't him, a nearby jet fires a missile and hits McCain's fuel tank.
Oh, God.
And that blast triggers a bunch of explosions, shoots shrapnel into his chest and legs, and kills 134 soldiers and aviators. And that guy's probably, I don't know, became a president. It's almost like no one knows what they're doing. So he's back home at Florida. He's talking to his buddy Chuck. And he's like, I want to be a serious officer. I'm having problems getting people to take me seriously. And Larson's like, okay, you got to go back to the war. That's what you need. So he goes back. Now he joins the Saints, an attack squadron aboard the carrier USS Oriskany. He makes these runs strapped in his A4 Skyhawk. It all sounds so cool. I mean, yeah. Of course you want to go to war. And in October, he takes out three MiGs. Do you guys know what MiGs are? I had to look it up.
Russian planes, right?
Russian Soviet. They're Soviet fighter jets that the North Vietnamese were trained to fly.
Thank you, Top Gun.
you do learn a lot from Top Gun.
You sure do.
On Hanoi's Phuc Yen airfield. So the next day, McCain's feeling all cocky, and the other fighters are heading toward Hanoi, to destroy a power plant when they see all this dust and smoke and a bunch of SAMs take off toward them. And those are surface air missiles. And McCain releases his bomb and then tries to climb out of the mess to a safer altitude, but a SAM blows his right wing off.
Oh.
He's spiraling down at 550 miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
He radios, I'm hit. He ejects from the plane. His right knee slams into something and breaks. The force of shooting from the craft and hitting the air snaps both his arms.
Wait. I'm sorry. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
He jumps out of the plane with a parachute.
Yes.
But what did he hit his leg on? The plane?
Into the plane. Yeah.
What?
Yes. So while he's ejecting from the plane, his right knee slams into something because the plane's like.
Okay. And then what happened to his arms?
So the force of shooting out of the craft breaks both of his arms.
Jesus Christ.
His chute opens. He tumbles unconscious.
He tumbled. He rolled away.
He did what you said.
Uh-huh.
Unconscious toward the earth, he lands in Truk Bak Lake in the center of Hanoi and weighed down with 50 pounds of gear, sinks.
Oh, my God.
So that jars him awake. He uses his good leg to kick up to the surface, but doesn't understand why his arms won't work. He's not aware. Like, he's not.
Plus, he's still got a parachute on in the pack.
Yeah, 50 pounds.
How did he get up?
He goes under again and with his teeth pulls the toggle to inflate his vest.
Okay. Oh, which makes him float.
Yes. 20 angry North Vietnamese yank him ashore, strip him to his underwear, kick him and spit on him. Someone smashes his shoulder with a rifle butt, and someone else stabs him with a bayonet into his groin and ankle. The soldiers then heave his body onto a truck. So he's in bad shape. So they bring him to Ho'olau Prison in central Hanoi. Ho'olau translates as fiery furnace. And McCain was about to learn of the deadly reputation of the Yellowstone concrete-walled prison complex that Americans nicknamed the Hanoi Hilton. So they dump him on a stretcher on the floor. And according to John G. Hubble in his book POW, A Definitive History of the American Prisoner of War Experience in Vietnam, no American reached Ho'olau in worse physical condition than McCain. The guards basically starved him.
Oh my God. He learned
he wouldn't get medical care unless he talked.
Okay.
The 31-year-old pilot drifted in and out of consciousness for days. When questioned, he just told his captors his name, rank, and serial number, like we had said earlier.
Yeah.
Then in return, the jailers beat him. Blood is pooling in his knee. He's begging for care. A medic took his pulse and shakes his head and says, "It's too late. It's too late. Like, you're going to die."
Yeah.
McCain laps back into unconsciousness, but soon an excited officer rushes in and yells, "Your father is a big admiral. Now we take you to the hospital." So for the North Vietnamese, his father, Lieutenant Commander John Sidney McCain III, is a big fish. They called him the Crown Prince. And Radio Hanoi boasted of the capture of Air Pirate McCain, son of Admiral McCain. So his father's an admiral at this point.
And this, okay, are you going to say why this impresses the North Vietnamese? Why
well,
do they
because
care?
They think they have leverage now.
Okay, got it. Okay.
So McCain's transferred to a medical facility. I'm using air quotes right now. So he wakes up a few days later in a filthy room, lousy with mosquitoes and rats. Rain's washing in mud.
I would just say, kill me. As soon as I see the first rat, I'm just like, break my other leg and send me off.
Well, that's maybe what he would have said. But they gave him transfusions and blood, but no treatment for his injuries.
Oh.
No one even bothered to wash the grime off of him. 2 weeks later, a doctor tries to set his right arm and it's three breaks. They didn't use anesthesia. So after 90 minutes of trying, they gave up and just slapped on a neck-to-waist cast.
So oh, my God.
An officer, whom McCain remembered as short and fat with a strangely wandering right eye that was clouded white by a cataract, then told him that a French correspondent wanted to interview him. When asked about the prison food, McCain told the journalist, "Well, it's okay, but it's not Paris." Guards returned McCain to a roach-filled room. Interrogators beat him. They did operate on his knee, but they simply cut out the ligaments and cartilage and refused to give him more surgery because of his bad attitude. By the time jailers left him in a prison cell, his cheeks had sunk, his legs had atrophied, his body had shriveled, and his hair had turned white.
Oh, whoa.
His eyes really had that fevered, bright death look. He stunk. He just hadn't been washed or cleaned since I had no idea when. That's what his friend, whose name I can't see here, said.
Who was also captured, I'm taking.
Yes. Okay. This guy's last name is Day. Estimated that 5'9" McCain weighed just 95 to 105 pounds. He never expected to make him to make it through the night. So he's moved into solitary confinement because he won't talk. Several months later, his father's named the commander of all U.S. Pacific forces. So he gets a promotion.
Now, I don't know if you know this, but does the U.S., does the Navy know where he is?
They know he's a POW.
Okay.
They know he's in Hanoi Hilton.
Okay.
The North Vietnamese offered McCain an early release from prison, but he repeatedly refused, saying he would only accept the offer if every American captured before him was released as well, which is kind of a big deal.
Like, yeah.
I would have been like, yep, bye.
No, that's why he's so revered.
So they kept him in solitary confinement for 2 years. So he can only communicate with the other prisoners tapping the Morse code on the walls. And then 5 months later in 68, but this is after 2 years of solitary confinement, they begin to torture him. So he's beaten every 2 or 3 hours by different guards. His left arm is rebroken. His ribs are cracked. For the rest of his life, he will be unable to lift his arms over his head. That's why he always would wave like this, like with his arm out.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. He always...
Yeah, his arms are down.
Yeah.
The North Vietnamese wanted a confession for crimes committed against their people. And then after 4 days of the torture, at the point of suicide, he agreed to write a scripted confession. He felt terrible about it. He told U.S. News, adding, "Every man has his breaking point. I had reached mine." He felt he failed his country and that other POWs endured far greater torture and didn't crack under the pressure.
I doubt that's true.
Like, I know. I'm like, I think you're imagining those
Yeah.
people. Years later, he would face critics who alleged that he gave the North Vietnamese information while he was a POW, but those accusations have been debunked. On the contrary, McCain has recounted stories of lying to his interrogators under torture, including giving them the names of the Green Bay Packers offensive line instead of the names of his own squadron.
Well, that's kind of what I always wonder when I see movies and things like this, is why don't they just talk but lie?
Yeah. I mean, I also think there's probably ways for them to verify certain things, you know. McCain said the treatment he and his fellow POWs received toward the end of 1969 became more tolerable, with his own torture ending around October. He was finally taken out of solitary confinement in March 1970, but would remain in captivity for another 3 years.
Wait a second. So this is like 6 years at this point?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So March 14th, 1973, McCain would finally become a free man.
Jesus Christ. Does it say how he was rescued?
I believe they, let's see here. They were all released together. It doesn't say here. I read that in a different article, but it doesn't say here. I think they all were released together. And then we know he served the United States Congress for the next 36 years.
Right.
After some other stuff. But we didn't need to get into that. But I mean, of course, we all know that story, but I didn't really know the story. Like, I didn't know it well.
Yeah, I knew that he refused to be released, and if the other people weren't released with him. And I knew that he was, I thought he was like in a, I was picturing like a, almost like a box he was in.
Well, that's, I think, what solitary confinement was like. It was just like this little box, and there was just like a concrete bed, and it was really awful conditions.
I didn't know that, like, he broke his arms out of the air. I mean, he started. How did he survive? It's just fucking unbelievable.
It's wild.
Wow. Unbelievable. Brave guy.
Yeah.
Super brave.
Well, not according to Trump.
No, my. But
remember when he says people who aren't captured.
Yeah.
Man who never even
I will
spent a until second in
the day
military.
I die, don't know why that wasn't the end.
Yeah. Exactly.
Denigrating a war hero. I will never understand how Republicans looked past that. All right. Well, that was an amazing story.
Thank you.
That was really good.
Well, and it's all because of me.
I think so. And we will be right back with our guest.
Yay.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi.
Welcome back.
We were just having granola talk.
Granola talk. It's a song we need. You know, why isn't someone sending us songs?
Mike Henry
too busy?
I know. Never Not Funny gets all the songs. We don't get any songs. Not one.
Well, I mean, our theme song, but...
But we were, I mean, you made that up. You dreamt that.
I did.
Is it in that book?
What?
Is it in that book? The dream book?
My dream of the POWs.
Oh, yes.
did you have my dream being held captive?
My dream journal that I keep next to my bed at night. Right. Where I write songs.
Right.
Remember when I said I was going to put out an album before I turned 50?
Did you say that?
Yeah, I think I did say that.
Are you doing it?
She's already
51.
Turned
51. Do you see my album anywhere?
Oh. I didn't know. Was that a legitimate aim?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But who would have been the audience for this, Chris?
No one, really. I mean, okay. Six people maybe, but I was like, right. I'm going to write songs. I'm going to record them.
Was it inspired by the success of our theme song?
Yeah. Okay. I was like, this is fun. I'm going to write some more songs.
I do this now. I write songs.
I do this too.
I also have that dream.
Do you?
My album title was going to be Low Practice, Low Standards and Practices.
That's funny.
Is it a country album?
No, it was just going to be covers of songs that I liked.
I was going to write originals, and but also I had to learn how to play my guitar that I've never touched.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of things that I had to do to make this
happen.
A lot
of barriers to your success.
It could be, I can change the date, 55.
Okay.
It could still happen. Still okay. Youngster.
Speaking of youngsters.
Speaking of youngsters, we have a youngster here. On the first half of the show, we talked about losing your freedom. Now we're going to talk about losing your voice with Samara Bay. She has a book, Permission to Speak, out now everywhere you buy books. She's an author and speaker. Welcome to the show, Samara.
Why, thank you.
Hi, Samara.
Very hard to keep a little giggle in.
Oh, well, thanks.
Oh, wait, your necklace says permission.
Oof, yeah, it does.
Do you know what I thought it said for a second?
Please.
Persimmon.
Yeah, yeah. I get persimmon and I get parmesan, and people are like, "Oh, wow, what an unusual name!"
I want a necklace that says parmesan. I mean, I'm not going to pretend it's my name. I just want to advertise my love of parmesan.
Well, listen, these necklaces are about our values.
One says my son's name, and one says parmesan. That's what matters most in my heart.
Listen, we're talking about the youngsters.
Yeah. Oh my God. Do you have kids?
I do. I have a nearly 9-year-old.
Whoa.
Whose name is not around my neck.
It's not persimmon? You have a boy or a girl?
I have a boy.
It's fun, right?
I'm pleased.
Yeah. I think
I would not return.
No. Good. Good. So what do you speak about?
Well, I had this book come out last year, and so I speak about the ideas that are inside the book, but also that are just inside my brain, because I had this crazy experience first coaching Hollywood movie stars. I have this big background as a dialect coach, so accents, okay. Accents, tongue movements,
ooh.
Storytelling.
Okay.
And then there was this crazy pivot that happened that it was unexpected, and then once I was inside it, I was like, in 2018, when I started coaching women who are running for office for the first time for those 2018 midterms, which if you cast yourself back was a big moment of like, can we change the story?
Yes.
And it was what we now call the blue wave. But that summer leading up to it, none of us knew. We were just going to dumb protests feeling useless.
Yeah.
The protests were not dumb. I felt dumb inside of them being useless.
I agree with you. Every time I went, I was like, is this doing anything?
Yes. So when I got that call, when someone had put me up for it and blah, 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 moveon.org was like, would you pro bono jump in and coach these candidates? I was like, literally, this sounds better than writing postcards.
Yeah, for sure.
And then it changed my life. Hopefully it changed theirs too. But it led to this book because I was just confronted with these massive questions about, especially women, but really anyone, these massive questions of why is public speaking so fear-inducing? Uh-huh. And especially if you're like, not who 100 years ago the public was like made for, allowed to be in. There's just some weird stigma stuff. There's long cultural story stuff. Anyway.
Oh, interesting. That sounds really cool.
It's like a how-to book that's really like warm and welcoming, but also like a let's F the patriarchy book, you know?
How fantastic.
Well, I want to read it.
Yes.
We'll definitely put it. We have a How to Survive books list for our listeners, and we'll definitely put it in our bookstore. On Bookshop for our listeners, too.
So what is your story that brought you here today?
Well, thinking about survival. I had this wild experience in my early 20s. I was in an acting graduate program.
Okay.
A 3-year program, conservatory, acting. Sounds fun, right? As grad school goes, no essays, no desks, no homework. Actually, the worst 3 years of my life.
Oh, no.
Maybe it was a combination of just like funky dynamic, 8 girls, 8 guys in a room together all day, every day.
Where was this?
Brown at Providence, Rhode Island.
Okay.
And halfway through, I'd had a rough first year, but then I took the summer and like re-fell in love with myself and life. I spent some time in Paris. It was a delicious summer. And then I came back and was like ready to, you know, change the story. And I started to have this weird tickle in my throat, which turned into real pain and a feeling of, like, you know, my vocal cords trying to tell me something. Like, there was a sense of inflamedness. And I started experimenting with like talking less and trying to figure out like, is this, what is happening here? And I finally got myself to a doctor and they were like, oh, you have acid reflux. Let's put you on a, you know, big pharma for the rest of your life. And I was like, that actually feels not accurate, but what do I know?
Right.
And nothing changed. And
you took the medication and nothing changed.
I did. And, okay. But I was like, it's connected to talking. I don't think it's connected to foods and like acidity. And why would it come on now in my 20s, right? So I had these really existential late nights. I remember I was like staying at a tiny guest house in the back of someone's house, like near the university campus. And it was cold. It was the dead of winter in Providence. And I had to have these blankets and my tea, you know, tea with honey. We all know, like, that's the only thing we know to do if our throat hurts. And I was like, it's definitely not working. And I'm in so much pain. I've now stopped talking entirely.
Oh my God.
And I had to drop out of the play. And I finally had a good role, right? I had to stop singing, obviously, all the things. And I was going to class anyway because I wasn't sick. Like, I had no other symptoms.
But it hurt. Did it hurt only to talk? Or did it always hurt?
It hurt when I wasn't talking because I had been. But, like, if I slept all night and then didn't talk in the morning, it'd be slightly better.
Oh, okay.
So it was clearly connected in my mind. I finally went to an ear, nose, and throat doctor. And they stuck the scope up my nose and down the back of my throat. It's like a little camera. It's not painful, right? Because like up there is not nerve ending. I don't know, but I felt it.
Yeah.
Like, there is nerve endings, but not pain endings. Anyway, got a photo of my vocal cords. And it was very clear that the V of my cords had a blister in the same place on both spots.
Oof.
Huh.
And this is apparently a telltale sign of vocal nodules.
Oh boy.
Which is what, right? Like, we've sort of heard in the cultural conscious. Exactly. Yeah. And like, do they or don't they need to get surgery?
Right.
And can they ever sing again? I was not at the like Julie Andrews level of singing. So I was like, this seems a little extreme. They did not say I needed surgery, but they did say it's like, you know, when you pick up a rake and you like rake your lawn for a minute and your fingers get the little red.
Uh-huh.
But it's not like all the way to callus of like, I do this every day.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it had been caught relatively early, but the answer was I had to go on vocal rest for like 2 months and then find a speech pathologist who could reteach me how to talk.
Wait, so you had to literally not talk for 2 months.
So the part of this that really stands out is that I walked back to class the day I got that diagnosis. I'd missed the morning session. And the guy who ran the whole program stopped everything and in front of everyone, in front of all my classmates, said, "So, what's the diagnosis?" And I was like, as vocally as I possibly could, right, as audibly as I could, I said, vocal nodules. I have to go into full vocal rest. And he said, huh, yeah, just as I thought, bad usage.
Oh, it's your fault.
Which is, right, it's like such a weird phrase, but I heard exactly what you heard. And I also heard like the like lace of shame around it.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, do you want sympathy for being injured? Because clearly Cause you did this to yourself. For shame.
And we could all see it.
It was weird.
But you weren't like singing heavy metal, right? Like why?
Right.
How could
you? So, I mean, the joke's on me because I went to a speech pathologist and I did relearn how to talk and I did figure out what I had been doing wrong, but I didn't solve the shame part of it until I got this incredible book deal.
Amazing.
Nearly 20 years later. And I didn't even totally put it together until I was writing the intro, which I did at the end.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the book I needed when I was in my early 20s and was like, I can get over the medical part of this, but the psychological part, the like, why would I have done this to myself? Like, you can hear me. I'm obviously a chatty person. And like my main thing I can rely on was ripped from me. I did the ripping.
Yes.
Yeah.
You did this to yourself. You glue-lead your own knee as an ice skater.
What was that first word there? I wanted my own knee?
You're too young. Glue-lead?
Galoo?
Tanya Harding?
No, I went right to her.
Okay,
but
term. So her, well, Galooly was her husband or boyfriend
God,
or whatever.
Okay, I didn't watch the movie.
So it's actually a really good movie.
But I really recall that experience. Yeah. Thank you for calling me so young. I wouldn't remember like the 90s.
Well, I don't know. Everyone's younger than us, so
I got it. I got
at this
story.
Point.
So let's back up for a second. So you did you walk around with a chalkboard around your neck like you were Helen Keller? I mean, how did you actually communicate with people?
I really I decided not the chalkboard, but I did do the notebook.
Yeah.
And I wrote things. But what I remember, and granted 20 years ago, right?
Okay.
But what I remember is just no one. Am I allowed to swear here?
Yes,
I
should have
asked this at the beginning. Yeah. No one giving a fuck. It really wasn't like, Samara, would you tell us what's on your heart that your mouth can't say? No, it was just, and this isn't even for me. I think this is what happens for somebody who is quiet in general or silenced for any reason.
Okay.
But you start to slightly think of them as a ghost, like their presence is in the room, but you don't turn to them for opinion.
Wow. How crazy.
I experienced it and it went on for months. And honestly, like, it's so different from the rest of my life, which is why I thought of it when you said, you know, what did you survive? But it did give me a huge amount of empathy for, like, who is not being heard in the room? Who's being ignored? Mm-hmm.
That's so crazy. And so you still went to school.
I still went to school because, like, what do you have a doctor's note saying, like, you're going to give someone the germ of a vocal nodule? Like, no,
yeah,
you know?
But you couldn't, like, phone your parents.
Right. It was email.
Yeah, everything was email.
And then Christmas break happened. So this was good timing, I suppose. I think that all this happened in, like, a late October, early November scenario. And my mom found me a speech pathologist back in my hometown in Santa Cruz, California. And she was lovely. And really, speech pathologists run the gamut. They basically are, you know, it's on the medical side of things rather than what I do, which is like speech coaching, like you have a big speech coming up. They're on the medical side. They're like, you're a patient, not a client.
Right.
And we're going to figure out what the pathology is here, right? And yet, some of them are really technical and some understand that this is psychological. Like, hi, you, me, us, all of us have some emotional stuff around how we sound. It's just part of us moving through the world. We have feelings about our body. We have feelings about our voice.
Right.
And she got that and she helped me get that. And I think, quite honestly, many of her clients were young women who, in my case, but in their cases too, had been ready for the big reveal, talking a tiny, tiny bit lower than my body's optimum pitch.
Oh.
Not full Elizabeth Holmes.
I was going to say.
Not, right? Like, Elizabeth I didn't Holmes. Know I was doing it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. No, you were doing it for authority to be respected.
Right.
But it's not your normal. And that's what
to your point.
Okay.
Right.
So that's what made your voice. That's what gave you the
and
blisters?
I must have picked it up like years prior, question mark. And it caught up to me because of how much I was talking. I mean, I'm putting question marks in all
this.
Yeah.
You
like, no,
you don't
one,
really
no,
know.
We'll never know.
Okay.
But I imagine that below the level of conscious thought, I had calculated that I come across as warm and smiley and friendly and whatever adjective you would use. And if I just pitch my voice down a tiny bit, again, not conscious, if I just pitch my voice down a tiny bit, people will know I'm like in on the joke. Like, take me seriously.
Yes.
So if you
don't
sound
mess
more,
with
sound
me.
Like more like a man.
As though I were trying to sound more like a man. Mm-hmm.
But you don't, it's interesting because you don't have a particularly high voice. It's not like, you know, maybe when you were younger, it was.
It's a really good point. In fact, people, I had, you know, acting background and people used to tell me in New York, I can't wait till you grow into your voice. Meaning that I looked younger than I sounded.
Yeah, right.
So you're right. I mean, what is it? Right? It's so weird.
So crazy.
But really, the speech pathologist had me, okay, here's everybody's quick tip on how to find your optimum pitch, quote unquote, this, you know, medical term. When you go, when you're just saying yes or no in an affirmative, if you're doing the affirmative version and you just do the hum version, and the hard part is like you have to sort of catch yourself doing it naturally and not manipulate it, that is your body's optimum pitch. So if you go, but then the words come out and they don't match that pitch at all, like you go, I do like that.
Okay.
Right? Something is happening in that little, in that little tiny hitch of a moment. So she had me unrecorded so I could listen back and like feel big feelings, she had me try to match my to the words that would then come out afterwards. And I listened back and I thought, she sounds ditzy. I would never take her seriously.
Oh, wow.
And how many of us do this to ourselves? I don't know, but
yes.
It's countless.
Yeah. And I find I even judge other women.
Yeah, there's that.
Based on voices. I had taken this writing workshop very recently, and one of the writers, I won't say her name because I want to don't be a jerk, but like she's someone who whose work I really respect, and she, to me, comes across as very like tough and like almost scary in a way. Like her writing is very ballsy and like rough and fearless. And when I took the workshop, I was so surprised by her voice because two things. She had such intense vocal fry.
Mm-hmm. No.
She was younger than I was. Mm-hmm. So
oh my God, your shock is hilarious. We're
well,
back
so she
that.
Had yeah. she had that very strong vocal fry, and every sentence ended on a question, and it made me really feel sad. I mean, I do it too. I hear myself doing it as well, and I always go, is this a factor of me moving to California 20 years ago and picking up some of the accent of California, which is very much a lot of things ending on a question that I don't think was a factor of living in Ohio, like, or is it just picking up the way other people speak, or is it being female? I don't know. But like hearing her voice so not match what I expected from reading her writing, I was like, I felt disappointment. And I had to look at my own judgment of why does that bother you? Why are you judging her voice as not being an authority now because you don't like hearing those things in her speaking? And it made me feel bad about my own judgment.
This is the anti-bias work inside of voices that we didn't know we had to do.
So did you finish school?
I stayed. I went back. I got the degree. It got better.
Good.
I got a really cute boyfriend who's getting his PhD in English, and like that got me away from the same group of people.
That's a good idea.
I mean, I highly recommend if you get vocal nodules in the middle of an acting program, go find a cute boyfriend in a different department.
That seems like good advice for everybody.
Cute boyfriends are always a good idea.
It was you know, is what the doctor ordered.
Well, thank you so much, Samara. We appreciate it. She's dying. And we will be right back with what did we learn today?
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Chris.
Yeah.
Are you ready to learn what we learned today?
Yes.
Based on the acclaimed contemporary love story of the same name, the idea of you centers on Solene? Anne Hathaway, a 40-year-old single mom who begins an unexpected romance with 24-year-old Hayes Campbell, Nicholas Galitzine, the lead singer of August Moon. Ugh. The hottest boy band on the planet. Wait a second. He's a boy band at 24? when Solene must step in to chaperone her teenage daughter's trip to the Coachella Music Festival after her ex bails at the last minute, she's a chance encounter with Hayes and there is an instant undeniable spark. As they begin a whirlwind romance, it isn't long before Hayes' superstar status poses unavoidable challenges to their relationship, and Solene soon discovers that life in the glare of his spotlight might be more than she bargained for. Sounds horrible, and I will absolutely watch it.
I don't know. This is very 50 Shades of Grey crowd.
I thought it was there's talk that it was based on Harry Styles, but she said it's not.
It's based on this book.
But I thought the book was like that after, or like 50 Shades of Grey was a fan fiction about Twilight before it was a movie. I thought it was that.
Is this fan fiction about Olivia and Harry?
That's what the rumor was, but Anne Hathaway says it was not about him.
Well, she doesn't know what the author based the book on. Use that as inspiration.
That's possible.
The famous bottle dance featured in Fiddler on the Roof is not a traditional Jewish folk dance, but the razzle-dazzle creation of director-choreographer Jerome Robbins. Robbins had previously staged West Side Story and Gypsy. That's
fascinating because when we were looking for bands for our wedding,
yeah,
someone sent us a tape of people doing that dance.
So
the
now
bottle
it's
dance.
Become a traditional?
So now I guess it's become a thing.
Oh, that's
I had
interesting.
No idea. I wonder if that's true. I'm going to do it.
It's possible it's not true, but it
deeper dive into that. Yeah. Also, they hired Jerome Robbins, the famous choreographer, to like basically do one dance because everything else is just like dancing in a circle, like the horror. All right. Aspen Soda was an apple-flavored soft drink sold across the United States by PepsiCo from 1978 until 1982. In 1984, PepsiCo came out with a replacement apple soda under its new Slice line.
Aha. Uh-huh.
You got to look at the commercials for Aspen. I'm telling you.
I'll try.
It is 70s, just wasp, dreamy rapture all
I can't wait.
One commercial.
That is a description.
That's just what I thought my life was going to be like when I grew up. I thought it was going to be like ski chalets and because of everything that was popular when I was a kid.
That is so funny.
It did not end up to be like that. Just ski chalets and wrap dresses.
I thought I was just going to live in a Three's Company apartment.
Yeah. That would have been. Who can afford to live in Santa Monica? Even with two roommates.
Yeah. Well, not I.
Want to avoid being a POW? Don't join the military. If you do join, don't get caught. Yeah. We like people who aren't caught.
Losers.
What a piece of... are you guys following the trial?
Yeah.
I guess I am, yeah. But nothing's really happened yet.
No, and it's also confusing what the exact charge is because it's like it's confusing to me how it's illegal because they're not saying that they use campaign funds. They're not saying... It's just... It's very technical. It's like about how... it's how they marked, like they classified it as something different in their own records. And for some reason, that's illegal. And I don't know why that's illegal, but like the Trump yes. organization. Yeah.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Yeah.
Why isn't it televised?
Because, I guess they just don't want it to be. But federal... This is not a federal. This is a state, right? But federal court cases can't be televised. So, unfortunately, the ones that really matter won't be televised. I think this is probably... I thought it was maybe just the judge's decision.
Mm.
Like, it's already a circus. Why make more of a circus out of it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But Rachel Maddow was in the courtroom yesterday. So, last night, they had... like a wrap-up of everything that went on. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you can read the transcripts if you want. I'm not going to do that. I can get like the smart person to tell me the highlights, which is what I'll do.
Yeah. New York state law regarding media coverage of court proceedings is one of the most restrictive in the country. But some reporters, including from the AP, are allowed inside the courtroom.
If this happened in LA, this would be on every channel.
Oh, yeah. It would be prime
It'd
time.
Be a reality, it'd be a reality show.
Yeah. Already. Yeah.
We'd be voting people off the case.
Lawrence O'Donnell was funny because, you know, his sort of character is that he's kind of like, you know, an older guy kind of.
Yes.
And he's like, well, and he's actually very funny.
Yeah.
He's like has a very dry sense of humor. So this was one of those special coverages where they were all there. All the reporters were, you know, like election night, but last night for the trial. So he's like, well, Rachel, from my beat outside the courtroom, there were three protesters. Like, there was, like, no one's there. Like, Trump's, you know.
Oh, like, he thinks there's going to be all kinds of protesters there for him.
Right.
Like, protesting this miscarriage of justice, according to him.
Yeah.
While he sleeps. Oh, guys, it's been fun.
It's been great.
It's been a great time.
Don't get caught.
Don't get caught.
I guess until next time, remain calm.